bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to the Photo Show. Yes, it's Friday, so the weekend starts here, and we're having great fun. We're looking at the week's photographic news. I've got the usual bunch lined up with me. Top left, Chris Forsman from Chicago, Illinois. How you doing, pal?
Like a barrel of monkeys in here, let me tell you.
Really? You excited?
I have to have 2 hours of sleep, so...
Yeah, got some damn
please
phone.
Enjoy, audience.
Some phone messing with your sleeping pattern.
Yeah.
Were you in there? Did you go to Cupertino or in Frisco and sit in the Ben and Jerry's Center or not?
Sore for me, but I did not get to do. I could have gone. I didn't get to go. It's
you did last one. Okay.
Maybe next month.
Next month.
I've had many, maybe.
Yeah, righto. Next to him, someone who's far more entrenched in reality, Kevin Newsom. How you doing, mate?
Pretty good. How are you?
Okay, I've had a busy week, but I'm home for 10 days now. I get my own bed, which is nice. I wish I had a studio. I really wish.
I haven't been doing any traveling. I've been tied to the studio for the week.
No, good. See, I like that. I wish I could do that. And last but by no means least, someone else who's used to being tied up, Alex Fox. How you doing, pal?
All right. I have no idea how to take that.
What are you up to?
Don't sound so excited.
What am I up to? Oh, I don't know. A bit of this, bit of that. Lots of manly, physically hard stuff, which has exhausted me. And I think I've just knocked 10 years off my life expectancy in the last 2 days. But, you know, other than that, it's been great.
What are you building?
I'm finally clearing all the rubble from the last building project. And then I realised that I needed a new lawn.
Because all the rubble had been on the lawn and killed it.
Oh, you know what? I have my forearms aren't even attached to my shoulders and my arms, and nothing seems to work anymore. But there you go.
Have you looked at the false grass, the fake grass?
You know what?
$16.99 a square meter, mate, and it looks like the McCoy. I mean, it is seriously good grass. You took a pic. I'll tell you. Let's just tie it back to photography loosely. If you were stood 20 feet away and took a picture, or if you went even down on macro, you still couldn't tell the difference. It looks superb.
Excellent. Well, last time I heard that saying, that sentence, that's seriously good grass, I think I was still a student.
Ah, thank you, mate. The week in photography. We're going to start off with some of the lighter stuff, and then we'll get to the meaty stuff a little bit later on. Typically, of course, Forsman has decided that we're going to start with Hasselblad, and I haven't put the backing on the shot, so it's got some see-through on it, but I can correct that now. There we go. The first one out is the Hasselblad. It's gorgeous. HD5 with a new HCD 4.8/24mm lens. The thing with Hasselblad is I'm instantly looking for the price.
Of course there isn't one.
Stuff the specs. There's no price on it. So what are we? I mean, this is 10 grand, 60 grand.
Yeah. Multiple tens of thousands of dollars. So
no, I reckon this would come in at UK 18,000.
18 grand. So we're talking
for,
25
for the
grand.
Camera or with a bag?
Oh, for the lot.
The lot.
For just the one.
Right, including the lens?
No, not the lens.
No. Body only, 25 grand US.
40, 50, and 60 megapixel options.
Well, they do a 40 at 10 grand, don't they, in the UK?
Yeah, that's the H40, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Which is still pretty cool.
Oh, it's an amazing camera.
Sure.
For 10 grand. Yeah. I might have this as my cool thing. Someone wrote in this week and said, I really hope Ewan Rankin picks him at a lot cheaper for his cool thing on the Mac show. So I'm going to pick this just to piss everyone off.
Take that.
I mean, we all love Hasselblads, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
But like I keep saying, they're supermodels. You can't take them home. Because the wife would get really upset.
Right.
Any redeeming features in this one that makes you lust for it? I mean, what was interesting, I thought, was the compressed RAW. New compressed RAW files for faster and smoother workflow. I mean, what kind of typical file sizes are we looking at manipulating here if Hasselblad are actually thinking about the workflow and compressing the RAW file?
Well, if you're shooting a 200 multi-shot megapixel, I don't know. What are you going to get off of 200? You're probably going to get 100
megapixels, right? What's that like?
Yeah. It's got to be 100 meg raw file, isn't it? Maybe. Yeah, as a TIFF, yeah, but as a raw file, we'd probably get away with about 100, wouldn't you?
Could be. About that. It's got ergonomic buttons as well, but let's save those for later. Let's not get people too excited.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does not compression of RAW kind of defeat the object a little bit? I mean, how are they compressing the RAW file to still maintain the standard quality? I know Nikon does that, don't they?
They
have a compression algorithm for it.
Yeah, it's just like it's something comparable to like a zip file. You know, once you uncompress it, you get the exact number of zeros and ones back in the right order. It's not like a JPEG where it's going to approximate. This is a cloud with a blue sky, and this is a tree by a river, or whatever. You know, approximating it with different patterns and things like that. Mm. But you know, the idea is that you're just when you have to transmit the data from a camera to a computer or from a computer to a hard drive or whatever, that you're not going to be moving the full 100%, TIFF level 600 megabyte file every time.
No,
and that's the idea behind it.
This is tethered only, right? Does it take a card?
I'm pretty sure it does.
Oh, that's a good point. Good point.
Yeah, they always did, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can put a card in them. I mean, it's designed for hand holding.
I'm presuming, Kev, that you've seen that somewhere.
I've got a friend who had one for a short while. I think he just decided it was too much camera for him and he got rid of it. I mean, it wasn't this one, but it was a Hasselblad that, you know, was full digital Hassi. And he was always a Hassi shooter. He was one of the last people I knew that went digital. He started off digital with a Hasselblad back to his old cameras.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'd be interested in knowing if he would see, you know, a value in something like this. But he's a large format portrait shooter, not necessarily commercial. But this looks like it's got a great commercial use, but I don't know. You know, I couldn't justify what I know the price would probably be for what I do. But it's an impressive looking camera. It's a beautiful machine, and you know, I find it interesting that they added weatherproofing to it. I wouldn't want to take this out in the rain, be honest with you. No, not at right. You know,
Subaqua. There's a Subaqua version.
Yeah. No, I mean, a lot of these things, because they're modeling shoots. I'd sort of done or been on modeling shoots where, you know, it depends what you do. When they start blowing the wind machine and they start blowing the, you know, the mist machines around, you really are a bit terrified as to what it's going to do to your equipment. So, you know, but basically this is a high-end modeling sort of camera anyway. So some really weird stuff flies around in them studios when they're doing all their fancy shots. So I think having it weatherproof is probably a really good idea.
I mean, I've got to say, I've got a lot more risky with my camera in recent weeks since I shot a video the other week and got absolutely covered in oil when a pipe was supposed to burst, faked the burst. And I shot video and it went all over me lens. And I was like horrified. I'm going to have lost my lens. You know, I hope they're going to pay me for today because otherwise I'm knackered. And I wiped it off. I gave it a clean with a little you know, like a baby wipe type thing, and then I got the lens cloth on it and gave it a wipe round. Couldn't even tell it had been in an incident. I think we treat them, don't we treat them with kid gloves a little bit too much?
Maybe.
I don't.
Now, having said that, I've never done it with a 25 grand camera. there's a certain fear factor goes along with that, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the price that we'd all jump to Hasselblad? If, let's just say a magic fairy turns up.
Okay, $2,000.
$2,000, and yeah, righto.
I'm serious. You said magic fairy. You said magic fairy.
Yeah, but she's not omnipotent, mate. So what's the price? If we said Hasselblad bought out a good value camera, what would be a good value high quality camera that you'd be thinking, oh, maybe?
I think they would probably come out with $20,000.
But that would make you jump.
No, because I don't have the kind of, the kind of work that it would be necessary to pay for that. I wouldn't pay that, but I can see some, I know some people who could and would, and I think that's probably a pretty reasonable price for this camera.
Right. Okay. But what would it take for Kev Newsom to jump?
I don't know.
2,000, right? Am I right? 2,000?
Yeah, probably 2,000-3,000.
Alex, you've probably already saying. You've been and gone, haven't you, mate?
Me? Oh, yeah, I'd pay 20 grand. No, I mean, in all honesty, this is the sort of thing that a lot of my probably competitors more than friends now, but this is the sort of thing they shoot what I shoot on. But, you know, they also do all the other stuff which I don't want to touch. You know, they do all the wedding and modelling and this, that. And so this is the one camera that can basically cope with absolutely anything you want to throw at it. Mm. If my business was what my business was 2 or 3 years ago, I'd pay 20 grand for this.
But not now.
Well, things will pick up.
You can make the money on anything else. It's fine. Moving on then. Pentax have released a whole series of cameras. We've got the Q10 here, which is a little interchangeable lens type thing going on. It's pretty pleasant. I mean, I never thought I'd say that the best thing about a range of cameras was it was inoffensive. But here we go. The Q10 compact camera system. It's got a range that starts at 12.4 megapixels, ISO range of 100 to 6400, which is quite limiting for the modern market, isn't it, really? And is it a bit samey? Is it a bit of...
Hold on a second here.
The flash arm's pretty cool, isn't it? It looks like Wall-E.
Hold on 1 second, because this is a second camera in Pentax's Q line. I remember we talked about the original one when it came out. It was like a year ago.
Yeah.
So, and I got the original Q right here, so you can see how tiny this little guy is. Okay, can everybody see this? Am I coming in clear, Mom?
Yeah, put it up a bit. There we go. Hold it in front of your face, mate. You're not that good looking. There we go. Oh, it is pretty tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got a sensor that's basically like...
a thumbnail.
They can put like a compact point and shoot, but it's interchangeable lenses. So I'm becoming a little enamored with it. You know, I've got the Olympus pen, you know, the Micro Four Thirds, which is nice. I mean, it's smaller than my Canon. I take it on trips and stuff, but the image quality isn't that, it's just not that good.
So you get
compared to the Canon, but here, if I'm going to sacrifice image quality, I'd rather have this tiny little thing to take with me.
It's great. If it takes a decent image, yeah.
Yeah.
So you're getting this camera for £379, so it's about $450 equivalent. With that, you get the Q10 and the 5 to 15mm lens, and if you want the 15 to 45mm lens included, that costs you £549. So that's expensive second lens.
Yeah. It's equivalent of a pretty long zoom, but they've got a whole range. My favorite lens, of course, is this little single focal length, kind of a normal lens, little pancake style. They also have these toy lenses.
What are they like on the f-stop?
This is a 1.9.
Oh, single very good. Length.
Yeah, the zoom I've got, the 5 to 15, it's 2.8 to 4.5. So, it's definitely decent for the type of zoom that it is.
And it's got a vibrating sensor to keep the dust off it.
Uh-huh. Well, it's got built in the sensor's mounted on one of those like shake things so that it does the in-camera vibration reduction type thing too. So.
And it's got a flash that pops out and makes it look like Wall-E.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. The pop-up flash is a unique-looking flash. I've never seen one like that before.
It's got a little articulation, hasn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Kev, any thoughts on this before we just quickly move on?
Well, you know, it's a interesting-looking camera. It's not much stronger than my little Nikon D300.
Right.
Same ISO range, same, in fact, it's a little higher on the ISO range, but same megapixel, and just not a bad price for it, you know, interesting. And I love silver lenses. I don't know what it is. I got an attraction to the cosmetics of those things. They're retro, and I kind of like that.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Alex, any thoughts?
Not a lot. It's inoffensive, as you say. It's a nice little camera for not a lot of money.
Yeah, no, I think it is. It's a cute little camera. It probably does a great enough job for the average day shooter. It's not something that's going to kill them walking around and carrying it. So that's got to be a benefit, surely. Definitely.
Yeah.
I love this picture. Some rumours of the 6D have surfaced. So someone half cut off a picture of a 5D thinking that would be good enough. No, it's not. Okay. 6D, there you go.
Yeah, apparently, you've got to actually Photoshop a 6 over that.
Exactly. That's when you do the job properly. There's right. The 6D body only, supposedly. The rumours are saying that it's actually going to be a half-decent price. 22-megapixel full-frame sensor. Full-frame, really good. We like that. Flip-out screen. There was rumours it was going to be touchscreen, but it's not. It's going to be 3 inches. 4.9 frames per second, which surprised me. I thought it would actually do a little better than that. And ISO 12,800 is the maximum top end. What do we think? I read this, and I've got to say, I've been in the market for thinking, oh, I might just chuck everything I've got and jump to a couple of 5Ds or something like that. And then I thought, oh, 6D's coming out, maybe I'll wait on. But I just think it's a bit samey, no?
I'm expecting something more like the body of a 7D, but basically like the sensor of the 5D.
Yeah.
It's sort of like an in-between because, I'm really interested in a full frame camera, but the price of the 5D Mark III is just puts it out of my reach.
Mm. Well, and there's no word on prices for this yet, is there though? No estimates on price. Do you see it hitting the 2K
mark? They're saying it's going to replace the 5D Mark II, which Canon has continued to sell, for what is it like?
It's
$1,500 maybe.
Yeah, it's back. It's more than that over here.
If it comes in between $1,500 and $2,000, then this will be a very attractive camera for a lot of professionals.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I'm agreeing.
It's got plenty of megapixels, a good range in ISO, and those are the two numbers that a lot of guys look for. They want to see, if they're not a sports shooter, they don't care about the 4.9 frames per second. They're really more interested in how well will this hold up in a wedding situation or an event situation under low lighting conditions and still give you a solid resolution image.
Alex, any thoughts?
It seems very similar to what they've already got. I've got to admit, it just seems to me a bit.
I'd personally be happier with even lower pixel count. Frankly, as long as I was getting the full frame sensor, but I think that Canon runs a risk here because you've got the D800 at 36 megapixels and something we're going to talk about later that's at 24. So I think if they go lower, they just run the risk of people saying, oh, it's only got 18 megapixels. That's, it's not as good as blah, blah, blah. So,
well, I think that's
only 18. That's what's funny to think that we were satisfied with 5 just a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 300D. Yeah. 6. Wow, huge. This is the thing. I've got a lot of people coming up to me now when they're saying, I'm thinking of buying a camera, what should I buy? And I'll say, well, you're getting this and you're getting this. And I'm saying about, the number of megapixels. And they're like, yeah, but it's not about the number of megapixels, is it? It's about the size of the sensor. I'm like, aha, well done. So more people are more educated now, but the manufacturers still just cannot step away from the numbers race. They still think people are doing that, and they're not. I don't think they are. I think they are genuinely more educated now.
Well, it depends how they use the numbers. I mean, this could be 22 megapixels, fine. But, for instance, Canon have got no excuse if this doesn't perform well in low light because there's all the technologies out there that have already been proven to work that, they could have put a 26-megapixel sensor in it and then given it the option to use half of them to make sure the low light pre-production is better. So you output a 16, but you've got very good low light performance. I mean, this to me, I've looked at all of this and I'm thinking he's, I mean, there's nothing in here that says the low light performance is going to be good enough. And that's where Canon, in my eyes, and for the last couple of years, has really fallen behind. And they don't seem to be doing anything about it. And I'm really disappointed. I'm frustrated by them more than anything. I think, well, what are they? Or why aren't they doing it? Because I've no idea.
There's something about it. I just think they haven't done enough with it. You know, they're one stop away on the ISO rating. It price wise, if they come in with this and they say it's £2,500, then
yeah,
I'm sorry, they've lost
Forget
me.
It.
Yeah, stick it. Forget I'm not. It, yeah. I'm not that interested. I think I'll be really careful. Really careful. That'd be someone at the door. Meanwhile, I go and answer that. You guys talk through the Sonys, because let's start off with the RX1. What do you think, Chris? Tell us through it.
Sony did something. They announced quite a range of cameras. They've got the NEX6, which they're putting in right above the NEX5N they just announced. Was it 2 weeks ago we talked about this, guys? So, and they've got the NEX7, which is their flagship, so they've kind of thrown that in there. You know, if you're one of those Sony e-mount shooters, this probably appeals to you. If you're not, I don't think it really does. What I think is more interesting is what they've built several cameras around this new 24 megapixel full frame, 35 millimeter full frame sensor. I'm gonna skip over the point and shoot for now and just talk about the Alpha A99, which is gonna be, you know, their Sony's new top end camera, and they put this sensor here, 24.3 megapixel, full frame. They've got a new autofocus system, wide ISO range, solidly built body. I don't think this is going to appeal outside of people who, you know, are longtime Minolta users or you know, Sony Alpha users. But it's such a solid, good camera. On paper, and I'm trying to remember the price here. $2,800. So, you know, I don't know. What do you guys think as far as, like, this is definitely kind of comparing, I think, for Sony, kind of in between something like a D4 and something like a D800. This is where it slots into Sony's line. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. I think Sony has slipped back from where they were. Sony, I'd have said, I don't know, 2 years ago, Sony had a real opportunity because they brought out, other than I think it was Canon had a sort of a high megapixel camera for the sort of the, you know, the people that needed all those megapixels. Canon had one, I think it was a, it was about 24, wasn't it? And the only other people that had it was Sony. I think Sony produced most of them for everyone else, don't they? Most of the sensors. But since, I can't think what it was. It was like a 60, some A60. I can't remember what it was. But they seem to sort of slip back a bit lately. They seem to be concentrating more on their new, you know, the original, you know, the cameras you started off with this sort of comment about. I mean, they make solid, they make good cameras, but I don't know about this one. But I mean, I looked at Sony a few years ago as a backup camera because I used to have Minoltas, and I've still got loads of Minolta lenses, which are very good quality lenses. Mm-hmm. But Sony didn't do live view and things like that. There was always something missing off the Sony cameras, which you could get from either Nikon or Canon. And I just think here again, there's just a few bits and pieces. It looks great if you're ready in the Sony way of doing things, but there's just always little bits and pieces that, you know, they don't deem important enough, but the others put in because they feel that they've got to be in direct competition, Nikon with Canon, Canon with Nikon. Yeah. But Sony and Pentax and the others don't necessarily bother with those minute things.
Well, my question...
Yeah, I think what's interesting here, like, for instance... instead of jacking up the megapixels even more, they've done some interesting things with the technology. Like they use, you know, they have their translucent mirrors that they use, so the mirror doesn't bounce up and down every time you fire the shutter. So their full frame sensor camera is getting 6 frames per second at full resolution instead of say 4 or maybe 5. And they're also, because they've got the translucent mirror, they've got two light paths, and they're using dual autofocus systems. So they can do all these interesting things with autofocus, like a like an automatic continuous depth of field tracking system and stuff. So I almost feel like they're doing kind of what we've been talking about. They're saying, you know, let's not worry about the megapixels all the time. We've got a good sensor here. 24 megapixels is a solid count. It's you know, XMOR, backside illuminated, you know, like full well, all of our technologies that we're incorporating in our other cameras, and you know, it's got a decent ISO range. Let's look at what else can we do. What other technologies can we take advantage of?
I mean, I think the one thing that I've resolved to do, I think Sony dropped the ball on the larger sensors when they went with the A55. That just didn't work. And I keep saying it every time that Sony come up. And when Sony released this week, I looked at it and I said, right, I am going to resolve that I'm going to go and get an A99 and I'm going to play with it for a weekend and I'm going to pass a proper opinion on it, you know, instead of talking through the one that I borrowed 4 years ago that I wasn't impressed with. But that's the monkey on Sony's back. It's that first impression on a bad camera is what kind of sticks with them a little bit. Kev, any thoughts on what you've seen here?
I don't really have a whole lot to contribute. Everything that's already been said.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not as up on everything that Sony's done in the past, so I'll let what's said ride.
Well, trust me, if you'd have shot with an A55, mate, you'd have remembered it.
Just one small, really inconsequential point, that this camera with the battery grip is possibly the ugliest camera I've seen in my entire life.
It's not pretty. It has to be said, it's the ugliest piece of crap you ever saw. That's just for the purposes of the video podcast. Let's make sure everyone can see it. There we go. That's the that's the thing you could say, though, is that at least the battery grip looks like the proper grip. It's a duplicate of the grip, isn't it? But it's nasty. It's big and nasty. I go with that.
I'm just saying the design of this reminds me of some of the older high-end Minoltas.
Yeah.
You know, like the Maxim, was it the Maxim 9, I think it was?
Yeah, that's not a positive thing.
Well, I don't think it's bad at all. I think it's definitely different than what we've come to expect from Canon and Nikon.
Yeah,
I don't think it necessarily makes it bad.
Right. Okay. Enough already of trying to avoid the main event, because the main event is the Nikon D600. It's coming. It's here. It's $2,000. It's going to be schwing if you really like it. Now, Kev, you start us off on this one, because you sent a couple of tweets out today saying, well, D800, never mind. Maybe D600. Only drawback being it only takes SD cards. But is that a problem? So is that a problem?
I don't think it's going to be a problem. I was concerned. That was the first thing I noticed. Was it a problem? But, you know, I posted that question on my Facebook page and got a whole host of answers from a bunch of very intelligent photographers, and it doesn't seem like it's going to be a big deal. In fact, some of them have indicated that SD is the direction that all cameras are going to be going in the future. I don't know why, but that's what they're saying. Another concern was that it was sync speed at 200th of a second versus 250, but you can do high.
That's such a tiny difference.
Say it again.
I said that's such a tiny difference. 200 versus 250. I mean,
well, honestly, if you're doing a lot of outdoor work, you know, outdoor portraits at the beach, and you're dealing with sunsets and things like that, sometimes you wish you could shoot it, you know, sync a flash at a 500th of a second. But you know,
now sure, that'd be different, but I mean, 200 to 250 is like a third of a stop. I mean, it can't be that big of a deal.
Yeah, well, right? It's a little bit. You know, every little bit chips away. But that's, again, it's not a deal killer. The pros, 24 megapixels, the same ISO as an 800 or a 700. It's got Wi-Fi compatibility with the little mobile Wi-Fi adapter, which is a great concept. I'd love the opportunity to use something like that and be able to transfer images immediately right to your computer Wi-Fi. You know, so there's a lot of great things. I love the price. You know, $2,000 or $2,100. That's not bad. Now you're talking. And but they're calling it a camera for amateurs or enthusiasts, but I know a lot of professionals that are drooling over this right now. So
sure, sure.
It's going to have a huge market.
I mean, $2,100, I'm honestly like, maybe this is the camera I would switch.
Because your girlfriend says, buy a nice camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how many times is that going to happen? It's yes. never going to happen again, ever. Never. It's never going to happen.
No,
I need to cash in now.
Most see, this is the thing, is it's a subtle difference, but most girlfriends and wives use the term camera in the past tense. You bought a new camera. Because you've got, that's the only way you get them in the house. And you say, no, I had this ages. Like their shoes. Yeah, see. Nick, Alex, you've been very quiet, mate.
Oh, that's good. I'll pick up shoes next time.
Yeah, Nick. Well, you see, I called Alex Nikon. If the slipper fits, yes. Cinders. Right. Come on then, Alex, talk us through it, because you've been very quiet, mate.
You know why I've been quiet? It's because I think this is overpriced.
Really?
Yeah.
Go on, talk us through this. Go on, this is. Go on, I like this one, go on.
Because, I mean, I sat down, because I've known about this, and the specs I've known about were spot on. Normally the specs I get given are close but not quite, but, you know, it's not like an Apple leak, this. This was leaked, every spec was spot on. So I've been looking at this for a while, and I compared it against the 800, and with the difference in specs and the difference in the minutiae of build quality and various things like that, I put this at £1,200 to £1,400, right?
Mm.
But it's not. This is too close in price to the 800. And for, in our terms, for an extra couple of £100, I'd go 800. I wouldn't even look at the 600. I think it's overpriced. Only because maybe the 800 is such a keen price for what you get.
Right. But
it just seems too close in price, yeah, to something that is superior, and quite a lot superior. And I think they may have shot themselves in the foot. No, so I suppose not. They may have shot themselves in the foot in as far as people were going to buy the 600 that were holding on for the 800, and they're not going to bother with the 800.
I may regret saying this. I think he's got a point.
Hey! 2 years, finally.
Because here in the US, the D800 is basically $3,000 solid, $2,100 for this D600. You know, for the difference in specs, if you're already spending $2,100, I mean, I bet there's a way to squeeze out an extra $900.
Yeah.
Out of a budget.
If you remember, they mispriced the 800 when it came out.
Yeah.
The 800 was almost this price.
I think they were too aggressive with the pricing. They wanted to just, I mean, they were clearly trying to blow Canon out of the water with the D800 pricing, and they did it. And now the D600 pricing is suffering.
Yeah.
Chat room is saying, Winrider says, my D5100 shoots just fine for me. Teresa says, no 600 for me. I'm going to go smaller, not bigger, but then again, I'm not a pro. And she'd prefer an iPhone 5 with the money instead of a... That's quite interesting. Mm. I love this picture. I've never seen a press pack before that includes a picture of the final moments of your camera just before it smashes on the pavement, and thinks that's a good that's all I saw when I saw that. Oh sugar, someone's dropped it. I nearly said the bad word. Like you said though, $900.
$900. I think you could pick up another lens, maybe two. You can, you know, get that little 85 1.2 or 1.8 lens, you know, for that difference, and that's not a bad, you know, little pickup to have. I don't think it's overpriced. Yeah, maybe a little, just a little bit. I don't think that's going to be a deterrent to people buying this camera. I think this camera is going to sell at that price.
Mm.
Yeah, but I mean, I'd say the 800. I'm talking as a pro, but an 800 is definitely usable as a pro camera, no question about it. And this 600. I mean, the only thing that's making this,
Alex, I'm sorry, mate. You've gone silent audio, mate. I don't know why. Try again.
How about
Better?
You're on the microphone of the computer now.
No, I'm probably not.
Now you're back. Okay, now carry on. Okay. So you're saying, yeah, anything about the price?
But yeah, I just say, but you're talking about, I'll go by the US prices, $3,000 for a pro camera or $2,200 or whatever it is for, you know, decidedly amateur in comparison. And I just, it's too expensive. It's too expensive. This should have been priced where the 700 was.
Medicare. You know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it's agreed. Not. And it's
mm-hmm. I think at $1,800 they would sell them like hotcakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
There we go. Excellent. Questions. Should we do some questions? We have some questions. First question comes from Aaron in Kent. Hi, gents. Love the show. I've been looking to shoot more macro and don't have any equipment for the purpose. I've looked at the macro lens offerings and think that £500 to £700 is a little bit out of my reach. Can you suggest any alternatives and any setups that are essential or that I should consider? Thanks for any help you can offer. Regards, Aaron Hunt in Kent. Start us off, Mr. Newsom.
Macro.
Said with true disdain.
Son of
a macro. Oh, right, that's it. He's hung up. He doesn't care. He's gone. macro, stick that up your butt. Right.
I was going to say, we recently were talking about extension tubes, weren't we? I mean, that's a pretty inexpensive way to get some macro abilities, right?
Definitely. I mean, eBay, $10-ish, something like that from China. It takes you 3 weeks to get them, but postage included.
Come up to your 50mm.
You'll get something like 10... you'll get like 10 macro tubes that will... I mean, they'll do a lot more than one-to-one if you put them all together, if you can hold them steady long enough, anyway.
Did Vincent Price just join the show?
He did. The sound of the thriller. Kev, your turn, mate. What happened? I don't know what happened there. You said it with macro, such disdain, and then you froze, so I thought you'd hung up. Macro? Well, I don't talk macro.
You know what you could use as a macro? You could take your lens off and turn it around backwards. Okay, that works. Mm-hmm. If you were so inclined as to have a very shallow depth of field and do your focusing like this, then you could turn your lens around backwards. I'm not a fan of doing that with digital cameras, but film cameras, it worked okay for me at a time.
Good.
Yeah, I don't think the technique works too hot with today's like modern electronic cameras, because back then you could manually adjust the aperture. And I don't think there's any good way to do that.
You might be right there. I've not done it with a digital camera. I remember
I had a, for my K-mount cameras, I had a little reverse adapter for doing that exact same thing, though. That's a fun doing that.
Alex, any thoughts?
Well, I was just looking because I'm struggling to find it now because I'm looking too quickly. But... Mm. I don't. Those prices are far too high. I mean, I've bought macro lenses for. Here we go. I mean, there's a Sigma 70-300 macro, which it's not a great macro lens. Okay, admittedly, but that's £110. I've bought 60mm 2.8 macro lenses for £180. So it's not. It's expensive. You can go up to sort of between £500 and £800 for a macro lens, but macro being macro, you'd want to be fairly close to the thing you're shooting in the first place, so you don't really need a very long lens.
You can get Tamron has like a 90mm macro for $500. So what would that be, like about £250 ish?
Yeah, it's £500.
$500 is £500?
It is by the time they finish screwing around in this country, mate. It's bloody awful.
But I mean, I'm sure I bought a 2.860 and it wasn't anywhere near that. And I bought it new. It wasn't like...
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the pro stuff and you're looking at the 100mm 1-to-1 2.8, you're going to be paying £819 for that, aren't you? £830, something like that. So,
but I mean, I'm looking here at the macro extension tubes here, and they're £7.
Yeah, macro extension tubes. Here's a set. That's what they look like if you're bothered. They're £4.88 with 99p delivery from Swansea, and that's what you get. And they're all separate tubes. So where you can see the separations on the barrel, that is each of those is a different set, and you can either put them all together or you can split them down into combinations of the different lengths. The only thing I'd say is, I mean, particularly as well, I mean, technically speaking, there's no end to the length that you could put the macro tubes in. You might screw the image up a little bit at the longer the distance, but as long as you support the front end of the lens, I would say, maybe a second tripod or certainly like rest it on a book or something like that to get a better stability, then the better you are. Look for a longer exposure, perhaps, and black card it as well. But
okay, let's just quickly. There's a 40mm 2.8 DX, admittedly, but it's, without looking very hard, it's £200.
Yeah.
That's the new Nikon one we talked about recently. Yeah.
There's a...
I've got the Tamron 90mm at Amazon UK for $350.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's doable. It's not... If you use extension tubes, it's incredibly doable, but, you know...
Aaron didn't say what camera. He didn't say what camera he was using.
No, it's in the thing.
Macro fold bellows mount system for Nikon cameras is $50. So you can, you know, if he's shooting with a Nikon, he could. It's a bellows. It looks like a lens shade, but you put the lens on one end and the camera on the other, and you know, use it as a macro. It's only $50.
They're good fun as well. They are.
I think macro tubes are a great thing to do because it teaches you an awful lot as well, because it's all manual for a start. And especially, I think, if you've got one of the, I mean, I've just bought a Lupe for my video SLR, and that Lupe is worth its weight in gold at 50 quid. It just sits beautifully on the thing. And once you pop that out, if you've got that Lupe and you're doing manual focus, you could get some really, really cool stuff. Don't need an expensive lens and then get the one, I mean, this would be the same for Nikon. Get the 1.8 50mm fixed and shove that on the end. You're going to get some fantastic results. And you could get the entire setup there at probably 3-to-1 macro for under $200.
Yeah, bearing in mind with macro, it doesn't tend to be something that you're in a hurry doing.
No.
With digital, taking a few test stops to get your exposure right, it's not normally an issue.
No, good point. Mm-hmm. Pretty good point. Second question. Hi, fellas. I've been trying to take some pictures of the moon. I've used a tripod, a 400mm lens and manual focus, but I'm struggling to get it sharp. Any tips from Darren in the chat room?
And the question might be, first question I'd ask is it a VR lens, vibration reduction lens? And if so, did you turn that off? Because if you're going to put it on a tripod, you want to turn off your VR feature. Beyond that, I don't know what else to tell him. Make sure he's using a trip cord. You know, trip cord doesn't hurt.
Yeah. Alex, any thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. Make sure that you're not exposing for more than maybe a second and a half, 2 seconds. Because it's moving. Well, you're both moving. It's moving and you're moving. You really want to try and get a speed of under a second if you can. And then it will remain sharpish. But if you try a long focus on the moon, it's moving.
Yeah.
Typically, don't you expose a full moon at about a 250th of a second? If you're filling the frame, that's a pretty bright, it's like photographing a light bulb.
Sure. But I mean, I've done quite a lot of lunar photography and, you know, you play tricks on it to try and, I quite often play tricks because I like trying to get the clouds around the moon to show and various things like that. Mm. And to do that, you have to do that with timed exposure. But there is a point where if you go over that, you're in trouble. And it really doesn't tell us an awful lot in here, but a 400mm lens at that, just open it up a bit further because I don't think you're going to have a depth of field issue. I think it's far enough away that you don't have to stop right down.
Yeah, but Mars is totally out of focus, so what should I be doing? Yeah, no, I mean, I think the other thing as well you can suffer with longer lenses is with mounting is sometimes, specifically the 400mm lens, it's got the center mount for it to try and act as a better balance point. Well, the balancing works fine until your shutter goes off, and then that balance then becomes the pivot, at which point the thing starts to rock backwards and forwards. I tend to find it's better if you mount on the body and then you support the front of the lens with another tripod if you can manage to get it focused. But I mean, I've been messing around this week throwing 3 2x converters onto my 200 lens and on my 800 and shooting it freehand and getting okay results with the 200 and god awful with the 400. But when I get more time and a better moon, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to create a front support for it, maybe off a monopod or something like that, because the shutter movement can give you a lot of issues, especially if the lens is getting longer and longer and longer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I happen to know that you've got quite a sturdy spare tripod there at the moment. I'm sure that'll take the weight.
I have. Yes, I've got yours. I forgot I've still got that. I've gone and bought a new one as well this morning. I bought a Manfrotto carbon fibre one, so...
Yeah, a bit lighter than the one I lent you
there. I actually did a bit of research, because I don't like buying tripods without going and look at them, because they get a bit flimsy if you're not careful. And you get through the post, you're like, oh, I didn't want that. I wanted something a bit sturdier. And I did a bit of research, and guess who's got the best prices at the moment on the on Manfrotto?
Someone like Argos.
No, Jessup's.
Really? Someone like Argos?
He's someone like Argos, yeah. I went up to Jessup's, and I said to the guy, what about a bag? He said, I'll do your bag at half price if you buy a head and a thing. Sold. After that. Chris, any thoughts on the lunar thing? Do you want to add anything to that? Or are you?
Nothing I think that would be of any benefit to what you've already said, really. Yeah, it's just a matter of weighing everything down and getting it as steady as you can. And shutter release.
I thought you'd gone to sleep there. Sorry, mate. Release.
No. Just trying to imagine if there's anything I can add, and I'm really not sure there's anything to say at that point.
I've just gone and bought some macro tubes. Cost me £5.48. There you go, on eBay. And they're going to come through, and I'm going to have a play with them next week and show you the results. Show you just how easy. I've got a set in there somewhere, but it's finding them. I'd rather order a new set than try and look for the old set.
It's going to be doing atomic photography.
Yeah, I put the two sets together with a 200mm lens on the end.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
I'll have to go over the other side of the room, but be able to see the hair on the fly's arse. Mm.
just to bring the two things together that we talked about, I got an email in the middle of the show that Nikon are doing Jessup's are doing a hands-on in stores this weekend with a new Nikon D100, D600 rather.
Really?
So they've obviously, yeah. They've got hands-on it this weekend, and they're doing like, get your hands on it, have a play and see if you want one.
It's a cardboard mock-up. There you go. This weekend coming, not this weekend as in tomorrow.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Well, it says in this weekend, and I got it on a Friday, so I can imagine it refers to tomorrow.
Okay. I thought the stuff was released, but I didn't think the camera was out yet.
unless I got some fake email, I'm pretty sure.
I might be going back to Jessup's this weekend. I could be a Nikon shooter next week, and then we got no one on Canon. Ah!
Yeah, you still want Chris.
All right. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. They pick all the bandwidth up and we love them to bits. And we say it every week, but it really is that bad. If you go to Paul Wheatley's Chuckle Corner, it's... I'm just typing it in now. Paul Wheatley's Chuckle Corner is actually something that he tried to buy on one of the shows to demonstrate how quick and easy it was, and rather foolishly, he didn't buy it. So one of his mates went in and bought it instead, and has put all the pictures up from his stag do, his bachelor party on it, which nice. Paul is now infinitely embarrassed by. There you go. So if you'd like to go and see Paul Wheatley in all his glory, it was that bad. It was that easy, if you like, as well, to embarrass him. All you have to do is use the click-through, go to uk2.net, buy the domain for like a fiver for 2 years for a .co.uk or a fiver for a year for a domain for the .coms. You get offer codes as well. So when it opens up in a new tab, go back to our place, click on the sponsors link, and all the codes are in there. And you can put the codes in repeatedly to empty your basket slowly. And then when you get to the end, just pay your bill. You get 20% off domains. You get £50 off a VPN for your VPS for your first month. There's some fantastic deals. Give them a go. And they've got a thing called Site Builder. And literally, I could buy a domain now, and before we finish this podcast, I could have a presence on the web using UK2. If you like our podcasts, one of the things that you've got to do is use the click-throughs to support our hosts because and the sponsors. If we don't get sponsors, we're going to end up with a lot of problems. I haven't worked on a Friday for 3 years, so we need to start getting the sponsorship going a little bit more in here. Please, please, please click through on the sponsor links every week. Even if you don't do anything, just click through, go and sign into your account, click through and go and have a browse for what they've got and then come away. But please use the click-throughs to all the sponsors. We've got a firm that do on the web show, they sponsor the web show, and I've forgotten their name. Oh, bugger. Who are they? I'll have to edit this now. But please go and support them. They're great as well. Oh, shit. That was going to go so well, wasn't it? I'll have the name for you in a second.
Could it be Pusher?
Pusher.com. Thank you very much. You know when you introduce, you know when you got your best friend who you've been known for 30 years stood next to you and you introduce him to someone else that you've known for 30 years and you're like, this is...
Yeah. I've known
it was, one of those moments.
Happens to me all the time at work.
Please support... I tell you what, my mouth has been part of the Ministry of Piss Pronunciation today. I've been all over the shop. Please support Pusher.com as well. Go to the sponsors page, and there's a click-through there for the web show for Pusher, so please use that. Thank you very much, Alex. Cheers. Chris, where can we get a hold of you, mate?
You can get a hold of me at arstechnica.com or on the Twitters at ForzMac.
Thank you, buddy. Mr. Newsom, where are you, sir?
At Newsom's Studio or newsomsstudio.com.
Thank you, mate. And finally...
.com.
Alex, where are you, buddy?
You can get me on Twitter at AlexGFox or in Jessup's tomorrow afternoon playing with a Nikon D600.
Oh, I might be there with you, mate. Might be there with you. We'll see you again next week with loads more photo news. And Photokina will be really close at that point. Mm-mm. See you then. Take care. Thanks for listening.
Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.